Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Well, welcome back to our final segment here on Circles of Change, and it's a real pleasure. We're going to go global by still staying local here in the U.S. by speaking with Stefan Lejeune in Pennsylvania. How are you this morning, Stefan?
Hi, I'm great. Thanks for having me.
You betcha. And Stefan has indicated the title of his talk to be Believing in Revolutions for Transformational Change. So stay tuned, folks. You got two revolutionaries who are now matched together for this half an hour. Let me give a brief introduction. Stefan is actually an industrialist. He's a Frenchman running a German company based in Pittsburgh, as well as he is indeed a new American citizen. So congratulations on that step, Stefan.
Thank you.
He has combined energetic, dynamic personality with multicultural business worldview of things. He's fluent in three languages, and he's worked on three continents, lived in six countries in the industrial and business materials sector. In fact, Ardec Americas, he's been there since 2008, where Stefan leads the Pennsylvania headquartered manufacturing business that serves countries in three continents. For over 30 years that firm's been doing that. This company indeed is involved in products that produce high performance specialty building materials for substrate preparation that go into things like floor covering, tile, stone, and finished surfaces for commercial, retail, and residential applications. Stefan holds an MBA in marketing from Cleveland State University, a European master's degree with a major in innovation management, and he's in the midst of completing a doctor of management at Case Western Reserve University, which of course is how we are connected. So how are you doing on your program so far?
So far, so good.
Yeah, and to take...
It's a transformation as well.
Isn't it? And that's exactly what those later in life continuing education experiences are, particularly one that carries the rigor of research and the like. It really drives us to a new space. Well, Stefan, you are often cited and quoted in this whole space of leading change within organizations. I'd love to, in this half an hour, tap on some of your precepts, but also kind of pepper it in with the applications of how you've leveraged those thoughts in guiding your own business decisions. So where would you like to start?
Well, I've been involved in change management for many years, and I don't think you prepare yourself to be in change management. You just do it as a leader. So
that's right. You kind of fall into it. It finds you, doesn't it?
Yes, correct. in my career, I've been known to be taking a lot of tough challenges in jobs and with companies, and inevitably you just have to do change management, and that's what I named my talk here about more transformational change, which is really a different level of change in companies.
That's right. And in fact, that this whole idea of revolutionary change theory, tell us what you mean by that.
Well, it's quite interesting. And, that's one of the beauty of this doctoral management program at Case, is that you find many theories that you don't know about in management. And some of them resonate with you a lot more than others. And when I... got to the Gerasik's paper on theory, change management theory, I really clicked with it, and really it tells you that don't wait for the big crisis to change. The role of the leader is to create mini crises in advance of a big crisis and try to maneuver around the big crisis. So I call that a little bit of creating disruption, and that's what I tell my staff at Ardec. When they tell me, we're going to do a change. I say, I'm an agent of disruption.
Yeah, that's right.
Because an organization cannot be static. It has to be dynamic, nonstop. It's evolving it's changing society and a changing market and a changing ecosystem. And you really have to create these, obviously revolution is a big word, but these internal revolutions to really go and adapt constantly to the environment.
Can you cite a specific example or an issue you've worked with your staff through on that? Because I know several pop to mind. This idea that, many times companies or individuals will pontificate about how, change only happens when either you see tremendous opportunity or you're in tremendous pain. And what you and I would both say is, yeah, that's true, but really you can ignite in certain case some of that pain or introduce some of that opportunity that really flips the domino in a different direction, right?
That's correct. At least you control your destiny a little bit more. You don't wait for it to be reactive, and you don't have to have a tremendous sense of urgency if you yourself, you know, looking 10 years ahead or looking 5 years ahead and then looking, oops, here, you know, we have clouds coming in. So you have to be good at evaluating what's coming. So kind of be mindful about the scanning that you're doing. And then you have to bring that in and really get your team on board. You know, we have to change because, you know, here is a mega trend or here is a problem on the horizon, some dark clouds, and let's go around them. So like you said, unfortunately, many companies wait until the crisis comes. I would say probably the vast majority of big changes are done as a reaction to a stimulus or a crisis. And they're done, and unfortunately, that's why people don't like change, because we're done with urgency and the last minute, and it's just, okay, you do restructuring, you do...
It's painful, yeah.
Too brutal, it is painful. So one of the examples that... right now I'm working with Audix is really telling my team that although we are a brick and mortar company, which literally we do throwing adhesives and tile grout, and but we have to be a pioneer in digital marketing. And you know, I told them that a couple weeks ago, and they were preparing to change how we do it. Just the basic, not just do basic websites and here we go, let's do blogs and LinkedIn, but let's look at, you know, how do we bring the next generation of webinars and virtual markets for our brick and mortar ecosystem. And so we're taking a proactive look at this, and you know, we want to be there in the next 10 years, and you know, and it's going to be required investment. But then again, you know, we don't want to be the last one to go. This is really, I want to be the first one to go with the company. So that's you wouldn't call that a revolution as far as the French Revolution, but you could call that kind of a redesigning of our processes.
I think, you know, the idea, excuse me if I stereotype, but some people feel that manufacturing companies might be the last to jump on board with some of the technology dynamics that are going out there with social media and the like. But what they may underestimate, of course, is that successful manufacturing companies in this day and age are there because they've adopted technology, whether it be, you know, data-driven decision-making and logistics tracking systems that they can understand and see the flow within your organization. But my question would be, though, as you just introduced this initiative for your team, though, are you finding you've got the resonant expertise, energy, passion right within the community you have, or are you looking to also include in partners with new thinkers outside of the bounds of currently RDEC America?
Well, I think it starts inside, and, in RX, we have a tremendous amount of partners, and you know, traditionally they're excited about what we do because we are a very unique company and always innovative and on the marketing, you know, pioneering side. So they're always expecting things from us, and this one will be a good one. This one will be an opportunity for them to jump on board and really, for example, we train about 6,000 installers per year, and we train them in facilities, we train them in on the field. We have training centers, and I want to get to 20,000 contractors trained, and those could be webinars or virtual platforms so we don't have to travel. We just do that, and either go to YouTube and or go on just a dial-up number or connect on that site, and you'll see the latest generation of Audix products being demoed. So no need to travel, no need to spend $1,000 to wear and write. So this is a revolution, and it's, we have no choice as a company, whether you're small, large, you know, brick and mortar service, you have to jump on the wagon. Otherwise, it's you'll be left. The train is spinning, and you'll be right behind it.
So the classic question many individuals that ask who are sitting in your shoes, you've got the great idea, you know the technology is available to do it, you see other companies, most likely outside your industry, that are doing that to scale up, to touch a broader training group, you know, individuals to train or be aware of your products. How have you created the sense of urgency then for the organization to see the possibility and the need? Has it been an external threat or an internal opportunity? What's the trigger points you've seen been able to flip here?
Well, generally speaking, you know, if you're facing a crisis, it's a little easier.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so, and, you know, every year, Audax Americas, we do a leadership forum, and I bring CEO in, different CEOs to come in and talk about their experience. And kind of, if you look at the Qatar model, you know, the latest book, Sense of Urgency, it's a great book. So this is a little bit easier. Now, when you focus on non-crisis related items, then you really have to get energized around the possibilities, and you're really showing a vision. You know, this is what could happen 10 years from now. This is what we could become,
mm-hmm.
and let's go for it. Let's jump on board and you create that excitement. And obviously, as a leader, you really have to energize your troops. I mean, it's not 1 hour per day. It's like 12 hours per day. And you really have to show them the possibilities and what could be achieved as a team and as a business. You know, and so you reach really deep inside their, it is transformational leadership. At the end of the day, you know, you have to really go into their brains and their minds and their emotions and trigger some, you know, lightning zips in there that say, wow, yeah, I get it. I want it.
You know, one of the things you wrote to me when you and I were exchanging thoughts on this whole topic of change, because this is obviously my space of research as much as it is yours, you said the comment that the big challenge is to have people understand the concept of when you are at peace, you need to prepare for war.
Yeah.
And I would also add that when you're at war, you need to prepare for peace, meaning once you're done, you're really not done. You're going to have to learn to change the change. Or learn to understand how do we now sustain all these great mm-hmm. things that we've put in place. Some of the experiences you've gone through at Ardex, does any of that come out with a story, that idea? You're obviously preparing for war here with regard to this technology initiative you're putting into, but then the idea of what happens after you're, quote, there.
Well, let me tell you, that's a very good point. And, you know, we went through a crisis, obviously, Audax is in construction, so we felt a little bit of the pain,
yeah.
But not as bad. I mean, we're a very solid company and very differentiated, so we have unique technologies. But at the end of the day, we took advantage of the crisis to redesign the organization. In the middle of the crisis, we invested in plants, in information systems, in infrastructure, because when you're in the middle of the crisis, you prepare for growth. And
right.
And that's what I told my team. Now we have to do some tough decisions. We took them. We made tough decisions as a leadership team. But let's go and prepare, plant the seeds for the next 5 years. And that's what we've done. In 2009, we introduced over 20 products. In 2010, we introduced another 20 products.
Wow.
And these products now are really coming in and allowing us to grow by 10, 15, 20% this year. So. So it is what it is, what you just said. When you're at war, you prepare for better times to capture the growth. So we change internally so much, and we transform our culture, train people, invest it strategically, so that when the better times come, knock on wood, very soon, we can reap the fruit of that change and that sometimes very painful transformation that we have to do.
It is. The other thing that I find that I advise with consultants, and this is my own lived experience, having been involved some significant changes in a variety of industries, and I suspect you resonate this, is, hey, as long as you got everything stirred up, now's the time to slide these other four or five things that have always been on your leadership wish list, because everybody's already in a jumble as it is, so that you are actually expanding the change capacity of your team, of your organization, without people feeling threatened, and in some regards, even realizing they're doing it, such that when you're on the other side of it, suddenly it's like, wow, we also implemented these other three secondary or tertiary things, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
And in some regards, those secondary or tertiary ones could be even more impactful than the initial thing you launched against. Like, for example, like you said, the fact you did 40 new products in 2 years in a business that's associated with the construction industry is absolutely unheard of right now. I mean, we feel it over here on this side of the country because of the ceiling, you know, absolutely falling, the floor falling out of construction, real estate, homes, and so on. But you're right. Now's the time to prepare for the swing.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't want to do that when the market grow again. You don't want to be like redesigning in the middle of it, because you want to capture, you know, every opportunity out there. So I think the key when you do this, though, I mean, you raise a very good point, is, you know, we did everything as a team, and and the team put together a redesign strategy, which was not just, you know, okay, how do we save money this year to go through the storm, but how do we invest? So we overall were I would say we cut some expenses and we reduced our level of, you know, spending, but we invested a lot of money in very strategic avenues. But the team decided this. You know, it's not one person at the top saying, oh, this is where we're going. You know, we did a lot of voice of the customer research. We invited our salespeople in. We did a lot of training because we had time.
Mm-hmm.
And we put a fantastic strategy for the next 3 to 5 years. And I think right now we're starting to see the fruit of that. So it is a transformation.
I think also, you didn't mention it, but I'm also suspecting you didn't do a top-down strategy, but a bottoms-up strategy. So you looked for the engagement of every single person right on the front line of your company, because usually they're the ones most attuned with to your suppliers, your customers, and your processes.
Sure, sure. I mean, we have, you know, so much talent in Nordics. I'm blessed with the team that I have. And when I came in the business, the team was in there. So we kept the same team and promoted from within and grew them,
great,
and trained them. It's fantastic. I wouldn't want another team right now. So we involved as many people as we could.
Which is actually quite frankly, Stefan, that's a very unique approach you took then, because many of us who are brought in to lead major changes from the outside, one of the biggest challenges we have is indeed saying, okay, how can I accelerate the opportunity of those who have a long, rich, respected culture within the company, but also where might my gaps be? And I think your point is many leaders will jump to the conclusion that you don't have the talent in the organization. But actually what I know I have found is that many times those people have just been kept under mushrooms.
Correct.
You know, and so how do you kind of, you know, open the windows and the doors in a different way and let people step forward?
Well, I'll tell you, it's very easy. I read the Watkins book, you know, the first 90 days.
Yes, yeah.
And that was the first thing, this is one of my reference books, but I came in the business and I really quickly did an audit, the talent audit, and spent a lot of time with people. And the crisis started there, and I was like, well, I'm going to need to really find the best talent. And I was amazed at the level of talent of people with 25 years, 30 years experience. My CFO, Lori, with, you know, 25, 26 years. And you know, I could rely on these people. They knew the business, the market so much. And all they needed is a vision and, you know, a little bit of leadership direction. And we just rock and rolled.
Well, I think, though, you're kind of perhaps not – I would offer, knowing what the lived experience you've gone through, what I've gone through, there's something else, though, that's in the mix. And that is you've got the leadership sense and sensibility, or you would, I think many of us would use the word organizational mindfulness, to really know there's more to deal with here. You know, this idea of fear, failure, I mean, the things that hold people back. My guess is that you know how to go to that space.
Well, it's not easy. I will say yes. I paid, you know, like the wife would say, I paid a lot of attention to the front line and spent a lot of time with them. And, you know, we really looked at what we did, you know, not as well in the past and what we could do better. And you have to, you know, sensitive to operation, you know, all that model you can apply really quickly. And actually, in my second leadership forum, I trained the team on organizational mindfulness on the concept to be more listening and receptive to signals and to the market and to be more open to use mindful troubleshooting, mindful problem solving, and not come up with the same solution. So it's part of the cultural transformation we're doing now, since the crisis is a little bit behind us. So we're going more into the cultural aspect of alignment and mindfulness and accountability and all these concepts that are great for a team.
Well, they are, but many times, particularly in operations-driven organization that's data-driven, some of that stuff is soft and squishy, or even someone would say it's a little bit woo-woo, right? But that at the end of the day, you know, that's the nature of what I personally believe. You truly want to get accountability engagement. It doesn't start from the accountable organization. It comes from the accountable individual.
Mm-hmm.
And so how you as the leader are igniting that in the people you have around you is terrific.
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. At the end of the day, it's dealing with people. And, I bring him down to everybody's level. And, you know, some of these academic concepts are very abstract. But you read those and you adapt them to so that people can understand them and they can apply them on their jobs. So one or two ideas and, you know, makes a difference.
That's right. Well, Stefan, you, like I did in graduating in 2007, have chosen to pursue a doctorate in management later in life, we'll say. We're still kids, right? How is the journey going forward for you right now?
Oh, it's great. I'm surrounded by great faculty, a very great environment at Case. And, you know, I'm just on fire with my research question and my, you know, my research topic. And, you know, I'm trying to understand why industrial companies are not more sensitive to the value story and, you know, and trying to capture really the value out in the market through the pricing mechanism. So I'm really looking at organizational behavior and pricing, which is a unique field of, you know, of a combination, I would say. But it's going well. You know, last year we did qualitative interviews and it was great. And now moving to quantitative. And again, it's a fantastic program. And I would say I learned so much in the last 2 years. It's amazing.
It's one of those things where you don't even realize how you're transforming in the mix of things. And that's not unlike, you know, the whole area and space of leading company change at the same time. Right, is that leading change changes leaders. And so that's what I'd like to ask you. Of course, that was my field of research. The tagline for my qualitative interviews is, how do you think you personally have changed in the course of creating these mini crises all the way taking on to the biggie crises at Ardex? What's the one or two salient things for you personally?
Well, you know, the thing that's almost, I would say, important for me was the human aspect and, you know, and really bringing the sense of urgency and talking to people, reaching out to people. And, you know, Ardex was a company that was successful for 20 years, 25 years, nonstop. And when you're used to success and trying to not be perceived too much as too negative or too conservative, really reaching out and understand, making them understand there is a potential problem out there and really getting everybody on board. At the end of the day, you have to bring people on board on what you want to achieve. So that was a lot of discussion and, you know, emotional conversations and when you do the change and when you do the transformative learning, you really have to change people in the way they think, they react, and they manage their emotions. And it's a challenge. I think it's and it never stops.
That's exactly right. I would say it's an ongoing and a continuous dance. Well, thanks a lot for informing our show today and reminding us this the idea that it isn't just the theory or the research, it's actually putting some legs on it and putting into application. So I wish you continued great pursuits with your colleagues, Stéphane Lezur at Ardex Americas and Ardex Corporation, a global firm, as well as I'll look forward to watching you get hooded a year from now when you graduate from Case Western Reserve, and we'll welcome you to the alumni circles. Thanks a lot, Stéphane.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
You bet. It's a real pleasure.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, 877-544-2580.